presents by opening them up and seeing a lot of neat things. You can actually, we have an Amazon wish list that you can actually go onto Amazon.com under Central Coast Zoo and purchase neat feeding things and toys and enrichment activities for our animals. And animal enrichment is a very important part to being an accredited zoo. So we make sure that we track and stimulate the animals and try and create natural activities for them as they go throughout their day. The zoo will be dressed up with holiday decorations, holiday music, and magic with Andy Morris. That is always one of my favorite things. And we have great gift ideas to check out in the gift shop with Santa. And one of the best gifts is a season pass, a membership, all year long to enjoy the zoo. We have a neat thing we're trying this year. The Atascadero Police Department is reaching again into our community, which is wonderful. Crafts with cops. How about that? I don't think they're making toy guns, though. I think that they are going to have a fun-filled day where kids and officers can connect on Tuesday, December 23rd. So this is a really neat thing right before Christmas Eve and Christmas. And you can go to the community center from 12 to 2. We'll have free hot chocolate. It's free entry. What they are making are wooden door hangers, Christmas cards, coloring stations, and you can decorate your own magical elf tote bag or elf socks. I think the mayor would look great in elf socks. Perhaps we can go together. That sounds, but we're not free because we're not kids, so we'd have to pay, I guess. But there's a special guest appearance, too, at this Crafts with Cops. I really thank the police department for doing this and engaging the community and reminding people that our police department are wonderful people, too. And we appreciate them sharing with our families. Let's see, man, there's more going on. New Year's Eve. Join us at the Central Coast Zoo for a countdown to New Year at noon instead of midnight. So this is for little ones can enjoy. From 10 to 1, we'll have a ball drop with Insider Toast at noon, but the event's from 10 to 1, free with admission or zoo membership. So we'll have some party poppers and different things, and there'll also be, again, festivities for the animals. So another fun activity. And this is, I think, one of the new things we're trying to do to continue to build interest in the zoo and attract even more families. Next slide, I want to talk about, we had discussed the wastewater task force a couple meetings ago, and I think it's really, we're trying to build awareness in the community that we do need a new wastewater plant. We need it now, and we have significant environmental regulations being placed on us by the state in our new plant that will make it a very expensive investment for us. And so we have selected, per the wastewater task force, this contract was something I could sign as city manager, but I want to share it with the council that this work has been done. We have selected a highly qualified consultant to conduct a customer user classification study. This study, and this is really important because we want to make sure we will need to make rate adjustments, and they are going up to pay for the debt service on the new plant. However, I think the community is owed a really hard look, and the council has tasked staff with making sure that the rates are as accurate and low and being charged to the user for what they use as possible. So really trying to recover what people use in the wastewater system. And so this study will evaluate our existing rate categories and look at a variety of equitable user classifications, proportionate water contributions that we could apply to future rates. The council will receive that study in early spring and make a selection on the model that you think most represents and is the fairest model. We will also ask for the endorsement of the wastewater task force. The city is also working with the Atascadero Mutual Water Company. We really appreciate the water company. We'll be allowing us to use water use records by category. So not specific people's records, not specific accounts, but restaurants on average use this and dry cleaners use this. And that will be very helpful in helping us to check our accuracy. So HDR Engineering has been selected to provide these services and work will commence this month. The East Morro Road winter stabilization repair, I wanted to share there were concerns from residents about East Morro Road that was damaged in the storm a couple years ago. We have contracted with Kirk Construction to install winterization improvements to prevent slide from expanding and to ensure driver safety. These improvements were completed in early December and included repaving in the pavement area damaged by the slide, so you can see that. We've also instituted measures to prevent water from infiltrating into the slide area and some modest drainage improvements in K-rail. The slide is budgeted for full repair when the street is rehabilitated in 2030. However, I will be bringing an item to you next month. It is only fair that this is covered by the Federal Highway Administration as an alternate route to 41. We have San Marcos is covered, but this street is widely used when there's accidents and road closures on 41 at that spot as an alternate route. CHP routinely uses this, and I think we have a very good argument that this should be covered by that. So we will be bringing a resolution to you. You have to consent to that and pursuing that funding first. That I think is only right. So I want that neighborhood to know, and I want the council to know, that we have not forgotten East Morrow Road. We are doing work there, and we are pursuing a full rehabilitation of that portion of the road. Another road we worked on, Santa Rosa Road on West Front, multiple drivers have impacted the pedestrian safety railing here, and this has been hit, I think, three times in the last 2 years. And we have repaired it. We worked with Porter Construction to repair the hand railing and install warning signs to improve pedestrian safety and visibility. And we did just complete these improvements. So many people ask about this too. You've never fixed that. We actually have fixed it, and then it gets hit again. So I think we want to continue to talk about this. The last driver, it was an accident that was careless, and we are pursuing cost recovery for this work, if people would be curious about that. But that is something we've done. I want to speak quickly as I wrap up about we have received some concerns about the fiber installations on the west side and the poles that have been popping up as Astound is putting in the fiber. First of all, this is a really good investment in our community. This is bringing competition and very high quality fiber optic network to a rural area that will be reliable and have greater connectivity speeds of up to 2,000 bits per second. And so that's important. It does include temporary pole installation. So the idea, and they're here to speak tonight, but they are installing this because they want to get this up and running and introduce this internet. And you'll hear there's actually some discounts for seniors. This is a really good thing for our community so they can be connected to the world through the internet. There'll be over 230 miles of cabling going in above ground to the end of 2026. The goal is to share poles and use poles, and so I'll let them speak to that. But more so, people have asked, what can the city do? Can we get these poles? Can we get this undergrounded? Can we? And the answer is really no. California legislature passed into law Senate Bill 378 and Assembly Bill 965 in the past few years that outline a need to upgrade current communication networks to higher speed fiber optic networks to facilitate growing community needs like remote work, distance learning for students, emergency response, commerce, and et cetera. The bills push cities and counties to facilitate the permitting and installation process in the most cost-effective and expeditious way possible. We must do that. And so the utility companies coming forward present the plan, and we must, by law, allow that. State and federal legislation encourages digital access, and part of that support limits our ability to regulate installation. So I appreciate that Astound has representatives here tonight to speak to what they're doing and what their goal is. I think it'll alleviate a lot of the concerns that we have in our community. I did want to share, we received a note from our federal lobbyist today just to kind of talk about this. Many of the big utilities, and especially the telecommunications companies, because there is such a push to get internet to all, are working. They don't want to work through cities. There's tens of thousands of us, and they're really looking for state and federal preemption. This is a trend that we're even seeing now in Washington, D.C. The Federal Communications Commission has released a notice of proposed rulemaking called Build America, eliminating barriers to wireless deployments. This will significantly restrict cities and states further from telecommunications installations. And so the bill is moving quickly. We are watching it. National League of Cities, U.S. Conference of Mayors, and National Association of Counties are supporting a joint letter in opposition that this may go too far. But I wanted to share that because even today, rulemaking is occurring in Washington, further eradicating our ability to represent residents and make sure these are done in a way that has some process. So this is actually removing more process. There isn't much left, but this bill would pretty much remove the rest of it. So I did want to share that with the council and the community, that this is what the state and federal government is doing. We're also seeing it in housing, but that's a whole other topic. So anyway, for questions, I'm happy to answer those. And for city and city-sponsored events, you can always go to visit atascadero.com and atascadero.org. And I'll finish on behalf of the staff, wishing the council and the community a very Merry Christmas and a happy holiday, a very happy New Year. I'm confident 2026 will be a spectacular year for us. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lewis. If you could go back to that map, and if you don't know the answer to this, maybe the Astound representative can speak to this, because I know we can't discuss this item since it's not on the agenda, but we can ask a question, I think. And if you could address, what does the blue and the red mean on, you know, little spots on the map? Well, we can wait then until Mr. Buckingham comes to speak. You don't have to answer it right now. Just please be prepared to answer that question when you do speak. Okay. And if you could back up to the Santa Rosa West Mall slides or picture there. The first picture on the left is obviously on West Front, and the other one is on Santa Rosa, I assume, just above the gym there. Okay, so got it. And so both streets fronts have been fixed as far as the railing is concerned. Okay, excellent. All right, thank you. Do any other members of the council have any other questions for the city manager? Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. You were speaking about Morrow Road and the need for using that as an emergency response just in time, because there was a rollover this morning and PD had the road closed doing one way as they're trying to retrieve those out of the ravine. So I'm glad that you brought that to light. It seems a lot of people are challenged with that area, especially coming downhill. So thank you.
Questions of council? Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Lewis. And our next item is community forum, and community forum is reserved for persons wanting to address the city council on any matter not on the agenda, but over which the council has jurisdiction. The Brown Act does prohibit the council from discussing matters not on the agenda. However, we may at our discretion ask staff to contact a speaker or to answer a brief question regarding issues raised during community forum at our discretion. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we ask you to please state your name for the record. So if anybody wishing to come forward and speak at community forum, please approach the podium. And we'll begin with our first speaker, and thank you for coming.
All right, now it's on. You guys hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay. Good evening, Mayor, council members, and city staff. My name is Stefan, and I'm a local resident here that was affected by an illegal fireworks incident this past July 4th. I wanted to sincerely thank you for your time, attention.
Our next agenda item is discussion of the ordinance regarding fireworks. So if your comments pertain to that, I'd like you to hold off to that agenda item, if that
sure.
would be okay.
That's fine.
Okay. Right. Thank you. Because this is community forums for items not on the agenda.
Good evening, Council and Mayor Bobro. Wendy Lewis with El Camino Homeless Organization. I'm here today really to offer a lot of thank yous. We are coming off of Thanksgiving, where we all got to celebrate with our families and enjoy a delicious meal. And that was happened at both Echoes because of the community support. So we also, huge thank you to everybody who came out. We had the most spectacular turkey trot. It was our 7th annual, and those have attended, it keeps growing and growing and growing each year. We had over 1,500 attendees, and it was just the spirit of this community. That's all I can say. It felt good. You saw friends you hadn't seen. We now have families that have made it their annual tradition. And the most important thing is that the funds that were raised will really support the services that Echo's providing to help people have a pathway back into housing. It was the most successful from a donation as well. We raised over $100,000. And that huge thank you to the Beloved Foundation, who matched the community donations, which was $36,000. And so, again, tonight is a night of thanks. I also want to thank one of our partners that I didn't realize was going to be here, Mr. Buckingham from Astound. They also have been donating services to Echo for over a decade, which helps us not only have incredible services to do all the work we need to do on our computers and laptops and telephones, but they also save our budget, which helps us put that savings into very cost-effective programming that we offer at Echo. And then I also want to thank just the community, our incredible staff. We're coming to the year end and all the celebrations, and we already have filled over 40 children who are staying with us their holiday wishes. So all of the children are taken care of. Their parents will be able to get those gifts and give to their kids so the kids can have that special celebration. We're currently working on filling wishes for adults. So at Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, we try to give something new to every adult that comes to us. And sometimes that's one of the most moving things we see. Someone who hasn't received a gift in years, and showing that we care really is one of those steps that helps people get ready for services and into our 90-day program, which we want to thank the community for all of that support as well. We have exceeded last year's record numbers. So between our shelter services and outreach and our homeless prevention, we've helped 370 individuals or children either find their way into stable housing or stay in stable housing. And so just want to thank the community. I'm out of time, so I can't tell a heartwarming story with the partnership with the police department. So I will come back in the new year and do that one because it was really amazing. And if you want to see it, jump on Echo's Facebook page and read Robert's success from a couple weeks ago. Would not have been possible without the collaboration we have with the city and this incredible police department. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for the update on Echo's activities. Mr. Buckingham.
Hi, good evening. I'm Jeff Buckingham with Stound. And just by way of introduction, I've been in the telecommunications business on the Central Coast since about 1983. We started a little company called Call America and got to know many of you people and over all those years. Through that course of that time, we had a number of different companies culminating and coming together as Digital West. We started building fiber optic networks. And one of the things we figured out pretty quickly is it's really, really expensive to do that. And we were having a really difficult time figuring out how to fund it. And so we met the guys from Astound and at a conference and really liked them. And they had some interest in some network down in Santa Maria. They came to visit us. We enjoyed working together and decided, hey, let's come together. They said, if you join up with us, we will build out fiber to as much of the Central Coast as we can. And that's really how the partnership between Astound and the city of Atascadero started. And I think the city of Atascadero did some really smart things. We partnered together to build, initially to build a network to all the city facilities. But when we built it, we got some grant money to do that. We had in mind that we would build out to the rest of the city. So once that happened, two other things came into play. One is we got a grant to build some underserved areas of Atascadero and Paso Robles. But the big one was Astound agreeing to put in about $24 million to build out to most of the homes and businesses in Atascadero. And that's Astound money coming in from investors to build it. So what were our plans are to serve about 12,700 homes in Atascadero. Right now, we're working on the kind of the west, northwest side of 41 and Highway 101 headed out in that direction and actually selling services today. The cost of service, to give an example, someone can buy service that's a gigabit up and a gigabit down for $40 a month. We also have senior discounts of $19.95 and $9.95 at lower speeds for lower income folks to be able to serve them. Everybody in Atascadero who's can be served, every house, will be visited by my friend Juan Carlos Herrera here or one of his co-workers, and anybody can call 805-393-1367 to speak to him directly and work out any individual details or ask any individual questions about their homes. Oh, and to answer the question, Charles, the blue is aerial and the red is underground.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Didn't know that. All right, thank you very much. Thank you for coming and speaking. And our next speaker, please.
Hi, my name is Ron Barber. I appreciate that Old Morrow was already brought up, and I'm a resident on Old Morrow, and I was walking on the 16th of November. And at 3 p.m., I saw the police roll up 41 and close the road at that time. And I had 163 cars pass me as I walked back down Old Morrow. So we do appreciate that a lot of traffic gets detoured onto that road. Then, and you know, I appreciate that it's one lane, but that's for 263 feet. I measured it today. There's another section where it has a cliff that's within 3 feet of it. And much of the road is in very, very bad shape. So it's not it isn't just that one section. And I appreciate that what was done in December to improve it, so it does look pretty good, but the rest of the road is in very bad shape, and we certainly can't be waiting 5 years to get that road repaired as it's currently budgeted. So
that's all right. Thank you for your comments. Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, Mayor, council members, everybody. My name is William Arkfeld. I am the property owner of where the business The Artery is located at 9135 Santa Margarita Road. I'm here to object to the loading zone that was installed next to my business. On August 30th, 2023, my wife, Barbara Nunez, myself, met with Nick DeBar and Jim Lewis. We met for about an hour, and we expressed to them how important it was to have parking next to our business, because our business is, a big part of it is based on picture framing. And picture framing, carrying it from your car to your business, is awkward. And so the loss of the parking next to our business was a significant impact on us. At that meeting, Jim Lewis put his initials on the design plan and said that the parking would be restored. Nick DeBar also said the same thing. He said the whole area parking would be restored. A short time later, I get an email, and it shows that instead of parking being restored, we have now yellow paint. Well, yellow paint means loading zone, does not mean parking. And it limits a customer to 10 minutes. Well, 10 minutes is seriously inadequate for our business. And if you walk around our neighborhood, pretty confident most of our neighbors would say the same thing. We tried to negotiate about this. Numerous emails, I sent a letter, and I got no response initially I got a response that this is done and we're not going to talk about it anymore from Jim Lewis. And after that, I have not received any communication from the city staff at all. That's been over a year now. So it really feels odd that our civil servants who are here to serve the public won't communicate with me. I've been very reasonable. I have not tried to take up everybody's time. And I know this is just one small little piece of the puzzle on Traffic Way, but there's more to it. Other businesses are now circulating a petition to address this issue in a bigger picture on Traffic Way. So it's not just us. This is a problem on Traffic Way that needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed soon, in my opinion. So to me, it's weird that they won't communicate with us. So that's why I'm here. I didn't want to do this. I'd rather have dealt with this in a private meeting and try to resolve things. Recently, there was a sign installed next to our business, and we were warned that the sign was going to come in about a year ago. We tried to negotiate a change to the sign to make it longer for the customers to have time to come into our store, but they refused to do it. And now that sign was placed in a location that blocks our egress to our back door. I see that I'm out of time. I'll stop, but I think that's a serious problem, the blocking of our egress, and I'm going to aggressively challenge the city on that point. Any questions?
No, I know that copious amount of staff time has been spent on this issue, and as well as my time. So
may I respond?
Thank you for your comments.
May I respond to that?
No, I think we're done.
Okay. Noted.
All right. Seeing no other speakers, we will close community forum. We'll move on to the next agenda item, G1, fireworks and consideration of a social host ordinance. And this item will be presented by the police chief, Dan Settles.
Good evening, Mayor Barbeau, City Council. As mentioned, I will be introducing a urgency ordinance that will regulate social hosts who allow illegal fireworks. But before I do that, I was hoping that I could give you a little background. Make sure I have this. Listen to that one. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's see. Before I, is that better? Can y'all hear me now? All right. So before I get started, I want to give you a little background on how we got here. There currently is an ordinance that's set in place that makes the use of any type of firework in the city of Tascadero illegal. However, there's been some issues with our ability to enforce that ordinance. Specifically, the issues that we have when it comes to enforcement is we would need to identify specifically who it was that actually set that firework off in order to give that person a violation, to give them a citation. Additionally, generally speaking, when we have something that's a misdemeanor or an administrative fine, you would have to, the officer that's actually given the citation would have to be the person that actually sees the violation. So both of those tend to be an issue when it comes to fireworks, because a typical type of call that we have for fireworks is fireworks are going off in a neighborhood, and the police respond to this, and they're able to confirm that fireworks, yes, were going off, and they're able to identify where it was coming from, perhaps even identify who's the person that's in charge of the social event. But trying to determine who actually put fire to the wick is actually very difficult. You need some kind of corroborating evidence. You need to either have seen it, something. And that always becomes very difficult. And that's exactly what happened on July 4th of 2025, when we had a call for service. And the exact scenario that I just laid out is what happened. We were able to go to a call. Some of the community members from that incident are in the audience right now. And we were able to identify and confirm, yes, we have plenty of evidence that there were fireworks, dangerous fireworks, that were going off in this neighborhood. However, we were not able to identify the specific person who lit it off. So we were stymied. There was nothing we could do enforcement-wise. Fast forward to July 22nd of this year, a lot of those community members came to a city council meeting and raised their concerns and their frustrations, and also brought to everyone's attention that there are ordinances called social host ordinance that potentially could solve our issue. City council at that time instructed staff to look into that, and I concur. I think that the ordinance that we have put together and are introducing and proposing tonight actually solve that issue. And actually, the way it's written, goes above and beyond that. I think we've taken a lot of lessons learned from other neighboring agencies that have had similar problems, and we've written some provisions in this ordinance that will address lessons learned from these other agencies. So how does this ordinance actually solve these problems? So, well, under this ordinance, a social host is held strictly liable for the illegal fireworks discharged during an event that they are responsible for. Additionally, under the current ordinance that we have that makes it illegal to use fireworks, it's currently a $100 fine, which is a bit inadequate. This particular ordinance makes it a $1,000 fine, and there's up to 10 violations a day, so $10,000 a day maximum. I think that it's important when we look at this slide to understand on point one exactly what we mean by a social host and what it means to be held strictly liable. So for that, I'm actually going to read that verbatim so everybody knows exactly what it is we're talking about. A social host means any owner or private property as listed on the most recent assessment roll, and or any person who has the right to use, possess, or occupy public or private property under a lease, a permit, license, rental agreement, or contract, and or any person who hosts, organizes, supervises, officiates, conducts, or accepts responsibility for a gathering on public or private property. Strictly liable means liability for a wrongful act regardless of such person's intent, knowledge, negligence, or lack thereof in committing the wrongful act. And this truly is the key to why this solves our problem. And I think it's important to note that if this ordinance had been set in place on July 4th, 2025, when we had that call, we would have been able to enact some kind of enforcement, because it took care of the two problems that we were talking about. Again, we can't identify exactly who did it, and the enforcing officer wasn't the person who actually saw the violation. Well, the reason why this host ordinance works so well is because you're attacking this problem from a different angle altogether. Not knowing exactly who set off the firework becomes a moot point, because now what we're trying to establish is, one, that fireworks were set off, and two, that we can identify who the social host is. If we have those two elements, then we have a violation. And so, in other words, it just completely takes it out of the equation. So no longer do we have to worry about the fact that some that an officer didn't see it. No longer do we have to worry about the fact that we can't specifically identify who let off that firework. Now, clearly the primary goal for any type of ordinance that regulates the use of fireworks is protection of life and property. But this ordinance has other provisions that were specifically tailored. And again, a lot of this is specific to other social host ordinances that we've seen, but also tailored based off of the lessons that we've learned some from fires that have taken place in other local eight municipalities, such as the fire that we saw in Templeton on 4th of July, 2025. That was a large response. There was a lot of costs that were associated to that response. When it comes to this ordinance, we learned that lesson, and there's a provision that was written in there that lays a foundation for the city to be able to recover the costs associated to that type of response. And the types of things that that includes are personnel costs, any type of medical treatment for injured first responders, repairing of equipment or damaged city property, and the costs associated with the disposal of illegal fireworks, which, again, are all things that would have to come out of our general fund if we didn't have an ability to recover some of those costs. And then what's not on this slide, but before I turn it over to questions, I wanted to bring up a few other provisions that I think are really smartly written into this ordinance, and again, tailored for it based off of other lessons that we've learned. One lesson that we learned is, well, what if the person that is the social host or the person responsible is a minor? And, well, this one, this ordinance takes that into consideration, and the guardian is somebody that can also be held strictly liable. Another provision talks about spectators. Right, so if you have a party that's taking place and you have a lot of people that are setting off fireworks or spectating, what can we do about that? There's a provision in here that you can violate somebody who is spectating as well. Which leads me to another point, which a question came up to me was, well, does this ordinance take away our ability to actually sign a citation to the person who actually was lighting the firework? Because it's very plausible that if somebody was lighting a firework at someone's party and they saw that the host was getting a citation, they might say, hey, that was me, I did that. Well, the instant after somebody lights a firework, they are now a spectator, so they are there as well. So under this provision, we're able to violate and give a citation to that person as well. It doesn't take away that opportunity for us. And then another question that came up that we addressed here was, when you talk about a host being held strictly liable for something, it brings up the question of, well, what if I'm holding a party and somebody lights a firework off and, don't I have an off-ramp? Don't I have a way of not being held liable for this? And that there is a provision in here for that to happen as well. If somebody is a social host and they become aware that the fireworks are being let off at their party, if they are the ones that initiate the call to the fire department or the police to come and assist with removing those people off of that property or getting rid of those fireworks, then they are exempt from this, from being cited for this. And with that, I stand for any questions you may have.
All right. Thank you, Chief. We'll begin with Councilmember Peak on my left.
Up to 10 violations in a day. Is that 10 separate videos of in 1 hour of 10 different fireworks going in the air, or is that 10 different police calls?
So it could be the same call, and it would be 10 different fireworks, individual fireworks being set off. So we would have to be able to do an investigation and articulate why we believe that there are 10 separate incidents. Specifically, when you look at that incident that we all saw the video for back on July 22nd during our meeting, you could tell there was definitely more than one, and you could look at those video and you could try to determine exactly how many there was. But we'd figure out as many as we could, and up to 10.
We can come back to you if you had another question. Okay, Mayor Pro Tem Darrows.
Thank you. On the violations that you would hand out, to individuals. I'm trying to understand it, the host would be one that would get it. The person that lit the firework, possibly, if they're able to identify that specific person, and then the spectators. So pretty much anybody there that doesn't try to do something about it to stop it, you can hand out 50 tickets or 50 citations to at an event. Is that how I'm understanding this?
So technically you could, but the intent behind this is that you want to stop the activity. You want to bring it under control. So our intent is not to go there and find and detain every single party goer and give them a ticket for this. Really, the spectator thing is there because we realize and we understand that there are going to be party goers within that event that are the agitators, if you will, and it gives us an avenue to approach them as well. So it's the intent behind this is not to give a citation to all the attendees of a party.
Okay, and then the second question I have is, you say currently the fine is $100.
Yes.
And we're raising it to $1,000, or proposing to $1,000. Do jurisdictions such as Atascadero, any city, county, whatever, have the right to raise it or make that number whatever they want? And is it something that can be challenged because somebody can say, well, you know, you made it an unreasonable high number or whatever? And what's the legality between, you know, picking the fine amount? That might be for...
Right, yeah, I think I'll defer.
So there are two approaches to it. There's administrative fines, and then there's criminal fines. A criminal violation that's filed as a misdemeanor by state law has a maximum fine of $1,000 per violation. That's something that can be imposed by the court. That's not something that we would do locally. As far as administrative fines, since it's not a criminal violation, we have a little bit more leeway on that, and there is some state law basis to allow higher fines for different types of administrative violations. So we're trying to not make it terribly onerous, but sufficiently strong that someone would be deterred by the potential for a fine of that size. We also do have the power locally to define what a violation is. So if it's a separate violation for each firework, that's something that we've got the power to regulate ourselves.
Okay, so this citation would not be a misdemeanor then, is that?
It would depend on how we actually prosecute it. Sometimes administrative enforcement is more effective. I tend to have the philosophy that the lowest type of enforcement is generally the best. If you don't get compliance, however, if it's a repeat offender and administrative enforcement is not working, then the criminal courts are a good way to make that happen because it takes it out of the city's hands, puts it in front of either a judge or a jury, and then they have to plead their cases there.
All right, thank you.
Before I pass it down to Councilmember Funk, to clarify on that, in the way the ordinance is written, I see mention of a notice of violation and administrative fine. Can the violation under this ordinance be prosecuted as a misdemeanor?
Absolutely.
Okay, so either or, depending on the circumstances or...
Yeah, like, and that's prosecutorial discretion. I will get the reports from the police department and make recommendations. If I believe it's serious enough, I can prosecute it as the city's prosecutor. We do that from time to time on cases, but every violation of the city's municipal code can be prosecuted as a misdemeanor in the criminal courts.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Funk.
Following up on that question, is the prosecution done by the city attorney, yourself, or the district attorney, and does that matter?
There are two ways that it could go to the criminal courts. If it's a violation of the state penal code, for example, that would be prosecuted by the district attorney's office. Prosecutions of the city's municipal code are handled by my office.
Ah, okay. And then we had an exchange earlier as I was trying to make sure that this ordinance does what we want it to do, and the language around who's a spectator was a little bit of concern because it appeared to me that people who might run out and with their phones and get pictures to be able to alert law enforcement to the problem could also meet that definition of spectator. Since this is a city thing, it would be filed by the city attorney. Can you describe how you would use prosecutorial discretion to make sure that we don't go charging people who are trying to help us help keep the city safe with being spectators under this ordinance.
Sure. Thanks for the question. While the definition of spectator under the proposed ordinance is very broad, prosecutorial discretion, what I look at when filing a case is the violation that we're trying to prevent going to be furthered by the prosecution that I'm doing? So if I'm going in and prosecuting someone who brought me the video of the actual event, then that's not going to further the prosecution. So that's a prosecutorial discretion where I would not charge a person like that as a spectator. However, if there were 16 people standing around a Roman candle cheering and screaming and whooping it up, those are spectators that I might be interested in preventing from doing that in the future. So that's how I would differentiate.
Sure. And I presume that you would be able to tell what they did with those videos, too. It would differ, you know.
Yeah.
Whether it was sent to the police or sent to TikTok or Instagram.
Yeah, it's like any criminal prosecution. You have to weigh the evidence. And I have an independent ethical obligation not to charge a case criminally that I don't believe I can prosecute beyond a reasonable doubt. So I have to look at that and make that determination. And there have been instances with the police department where I've said, yes, probably a preponderance of the evidence this happened, but not beyond a reasonable doubt, I can't file this.
Okay, thank you. A couple other questions. They're a little more general. In terms of the cost recovery, and I'm not sure who's going to answer this one, but if somebody with fireworks sets off a fire that requires the airplanes to respond, as we saw a number of times on other kinds of situations this summer, what's the approximate cost that the city might bear of a plane coming in for a fire retardant drop, and is that something that we could send the bill to the person that instigated that fire?
The answer is yes. Section 4.805 of the proposed ordinance is response cost, and it says that the city shall be entitled to recover from any person found to be in violation of any provision of this chapter the city's full response costs.
Okay. And if for the city manager or anyone else, if you can recall from this summer, I recall that you were watching the planes coming in with fire retardant drops and counting the cost of each drop. What approximately was that?
He can give you a better idea. I can approximate it, but Ms. Gell or Chief Bryson.
Yeah, I'm hesitant to give you an exact number. We have not been billed for a fire from aircraft from the state or the federal aviation resources. And I'm hesitant to throw out a number because I'm going to be off a little bit, but for any of the responses this summer, we were not billed.
I think for effect, you could share, we were not billed because those were in the state resource area. And so there was some, but nonetheless, I think if a fire broke out in the Pinal neighborhood in the center of the town and we requested that type of resource in a local fire, it could be a five-figure number. The planes aren't $1,000 a drop. They're more than that. So I think you get more. Where you're trying to get. This is a large number.
Right, ballpark. This is a cost that might put that $10,000 a day limit to shame. Yeah. So we really don't want people to burn the place down. Okay, and then could you describe the plans to publicize this ordinance? We're being asked tonight to put an ordinance in effect that if at least four of us vote in favor, will go into effect immediately. And with the intent that folks who might be tempted to celebrate New Year's Eve with illegal fireworks would be less tempted to do so. For this to work, we've got to tell people this is now a really big find. That's the deterrent effect. Can you briefly allude to what the city has planned for publicity of this new ordinance?
So at this point, I mean, we're going to be obviously one of the easiest ways that we can do that is through social media. We're going to also try to get the word out. A lot of times when an incident takes place, I get a lot of phone calls from our local press, and they ask me questions. And the favor that they do in return to me is when I have something that I would like to get the word out on, I call them. And I say, hey, I have something that's really important that I would like you to help me get out. So that's another avenue that I use.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Newsom.
I have nothing else to ask.
Okay. Thank you. I did have a couple questions regarding on the spectator, because the definition, you know, is basically anybody watching. So, I mean, if I'm having a party with 50 people in my backyard and, you know, unbeknownst to me, my foolish friend here, he, you know, starts shooting off fireworks. In theory, everybody is a spectator. Some of them are going, half of them are saying, hey, that's really cool. Good job, Mark. The other half are saying, what the heck are you doing? And so you're saying, as the owner, I would have to react quickly to say, what the heck are you doing? You know, we could get in a lot of trouble for that. And then we're not, I mean, because I can imagine some property owners will go, what the heck are you doing? And then they hope nothing's going to happen. They're not going to call the police. They're not going to report it. They hope it, you know, nothing bad happens and it just goes away. But then the neighbors are out there, you know, taping this because they're very upset. Or I could see, you know, you could have some people on the street saying, hey, that's really cool. And you have a bunch of other people saying, what the heck are you doing? That's, you know, stupid and dangerous.
Right.
And so if neighbors call, homeowners, or you show up and the homeowner says, hey, I told him, you know, that was a dumb idea. You shouldn't do that. He'd have to basically, the homeowner would have to actually finger somebody in their party or take responsibility as the social host or property owner, right?
Correct. Yeah. Well, you know, and then we can also look at other video that exists, any type of other corroborating evidence. I think one of the important points when it comes to the spectator, and I can use another type of crime as something to illustrate that, but I think we've all seen videos where, cars will take over an intersection and they'll start doing donuts and all these people mm-hmm. come out and they're spectators. You can tell when you're looking at these videos, the spectators that are encouraging the behavior, the ones that are, you know, a part of the problem, and those that are curious and just came out, and the ones that aren't really part of the problem per se. In most of those cases, unless you have something like this that is written the way this is written, there's not a lot you can do for somebody who just came out to watch. Even if you look at the video and say, this person is clearly a part of the problem. Having something like this written into this ordinance gives us the ability to address that. And the intent behind it is absolutely not, you know, just like anybody who is at the party, we have the opportunity to write a ticket for, that would defeat and erode the public trust that we have. And that is number one thing that legislative laws don't want to do. You know, we are very careful to preserve the public trust. And that, I understand, is one way to erode that. And that's, so it's not our intent.
Well, and speaking of this, in terms of videos and video evidence, what I like about this is that, you know, in the past, basically, was you had to have a police officer witness the offending party commit the offense. And it's always bothered me a sense of nowadays you have video, and as long as it's genuine video, video seems like great evidence. But in this case, you can use the video of a neighbor who's sitting there and they're, you know, they're taking video of repeated fireworks. The video would be substantial enough evidence to prosecute, because you're essentially now prosecuting really more or less the property, right, with the property owner being the default responsible party.
And again, the way this is written, you're making it some of that a moot point, you know, because now we're trying to prove different things. I lost my train of thought on that, but yes. That's
okay. Well, so, and then speaking of the property, I think it's clear in here, though, that if you rent your property out, then it's the tenant, whoever has the leasehold, the right to be there and hold a party. They're the presumed responsible person, and we're not going to hold a property owner responsible for
Correct.
The actions of their tenant.
Right.
Unless it's, but they could have something in their lease even that says, like they do in San Luis Obispo, where a lot of the, you know, college-oriented leases will say, you know, you're responsible tenant for paying noise violation, that sort of thing. So
certainly, okay, they could do that.
That's something that landlords could perhaps be advised to do, to notify their tenants that they're responsible for any violation of this nature. Okay. All righty. I think that's it. And we will open this up to public comments. So apologize for cutting you off earlier, but now is the time.
No problem. Hello again, Mayor, council members, and city staff. I'm going to skip through a lot of this because this was a great discussion that I definitely appreciate. But I did want to point out that one other aspect of this proposed ordinance is the ability for someone who's accused or issued a citation to appeal, which I think is a very reasonable expectation for anyone who might have a, you know, reservation about this ordinance. Anyways, I just wanted to extend my heartfelt thanks to the city and especially to police chief and fire chief for taking the time to meet with our neighborhood. The willingness to listen, answer questions, and share expertise in this area has been invaluable, and it showed how committed you are to keeping our neighborhood and our city safe. I really appreciate your time and your effort. The illegal fireworks aren't just a nuisance. They pose a real danger to people, pets, and property. I do think that this ordinance accurately reflects the danger that every single match, every single firework, every single projectile that lands in your backyard poses to the entire city. I mean, we live in a flammable state. So this ordinance is an important step forward, especially with its inclusion of enforceable action for social host citations. Having the clear consequences laid out with the ability to appeal makes for a genuine difference and helps prevent future incidents like the ones that we have experienced recently in our state. Thank you again for your leadership, your collaboration, and your commitment to protecting our community.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other persons wishing to speak to council? All right, we'll close public comment on this issue and bring it back to the council for motion. I do want to comment that we certainly appreciate the neighborhood and how they handled this issue and how they brought this to our attention in July, after July 4th, and how they basically revealed to us something that we hadn't adequately thought about. That is, we had an inadequate ordinance. And as a result of their action in July, you know, we asked staff to come back with this, and now we're here this evening in time to do this before New Year's Eve. And so again, we appreciate how the neighborhood handled this. So with that, I'll turn it over to my colleagues, see if anybody has any further discussion or a motion.
I'll just comment briefly that, you know, we're not trying to be down on people having safe ways to have fun. What we're looking at is wanting to make sure that nobody in the no business or home in the community goes the way of Templeton Feed and Grain, which was just some kids who wanted to have a little fun by seeing if a firework couldn't land on the top of that building, if I'm roughly characterizing the case there. So I'm really encouraged that we have this. It helps keep our community safe. We have learned that that most of our community is at least moderate fire risk, and quite a bit of our community is at high or very high hazard of fire. And so we need this kind of protection for our community to keep everybody safe. So if nobody has further comments, I am happy to move approval of this ordinance as the staff has recommended it. It's an urgency ordinance.
I'll second.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion by Councilmember Funk, second by Mayor Pro Tem Daras. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Peak?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daras?
Yes.
Mayor Brabeau?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks again to the neighborhood. All right, we will move on to our next item, which is council announcements and committee reports. I will begin on my right this time with Councilmember Newsom.
So many things to report. I feel like it's been an eternity since we met.
Well, it's been.
We had the city schools committee meeting on November 21st. Great conversations and partnership, working all for the benefits of our youth. A few things that came out of that was something that I'm asking our young